Dragon's Treasure. Bet you've never heard a sermon with that title before. No, well, we're going to learn a lot today about some interesting things. How to steal a dragon's treasure. Have you ever faced a dragon? I would say, metaphorically, you have. Many times, and certainly I have. Perhaps what you faced you didn't recognize as being a dragon, but a dragon it definitely was, and I think perhaps some of us are thinking about some of our old school teachers.
But anyway,
no disrespect to any teachers here present, which I'm sure are not dragons at all. But we have dragons come into our lives, and we have to decide how to deal with them. Dragons are famous. We have there, of course, what's the name of that dragon in The Hobbit? How do you pronounce that even? Smaug? Smaug, okay. So most people have heard of Smaug in The Hobbit. Or if you've not heard of him, you certainly surely have heard of St. George and the dragon, right? Yeah. And St. George is the patron saint of England. He's also the patron saint of Turkey. And I think a few other places as well, so we share him. Though we know about this kind of mythology of dragons, yet there are real, metaphorically, real dragons in our own lives. Dragons are interesting. Dragons tend to be rather scaly. They tend to be rather fiery, and they tend to be rather big and strong. Apparently they fly. But the other thing about dragons is that they hoard treasure. Right, you go back to old Smaug there. They want his treasure, don't they? He's got the gold, he's got the jewels, he's got untold treasure. And in all mythologies of dragons around the world, they hoard this treasure. Sometimes beautiful women, virgins as well, usually. I don't know why they want one as they're a dragon, but anyway, but they have something precious and valuable that other people want, and they have a treasure. And we have in our lives things that, if we deal with them right, though they may be fearsome, though things in our lives look like they might break into a conflagration if we deal with it, we're afraid of the smoke and the fire that might happen if we deal with these challenges in our lives, yet there is great treasure available if we actually fight the dragons in our lives. What are the dragons in our lives? They are the things that we refuse to face up to. The dragons in our lives are the things that smell of smoke. They almost are on fire, and you're afraid if you deal with them, they will indeed catch fire. The dragons in our lives are the things that we refuse to acknowledge as issues that need to be dealt with. The dragons in our lives are the things that we know we need to fight and yet refuse to go into battle against. The problem with dragons in our lives is that if we don't deal with them, they get bigger. And they get bigger, and they dominate our lives. And dragons in our lives are almost always about relationships and the damage they do to our relationships. What we're going to do today is I want to read you a story, and then we're going to get into a Bible passage as well, to investigate the best way to deal, as an example, the best way to deal with our dragons. Now, I got this book recently, which I really like. It's a kid's book, and it's called There's No Such Thing as a Dragon. And I'm going to read you the story. And as I read you the story, think about the meaning behind the story, because it's one of those kids' stories that has a message that's also for not only children, but also for adults. Think about what the message might be for you from this story, There's No Such Thing as a Dragon. There we go. There's No Such Thing as a Dragon by Jack Kent. Billy Bixby was rather surprised when he woke up one morning and found a dragon in his room. It was a small dragon, about the size of a kitten. The dragon wagged its tail happily when Billy patted it on its head. Billy went downstairs to tell his mother. "There's no such thing as a dragon," said Billy's mother, and she said it like she meant it. Billy went back to his room and began to dress. The dragon came close to Billy and wagged its tail. But Billy didn't pat it. If there's no such thing as something, it's silly to pat it on the head. Billy washed his face and hands and went down to breakfast. The dragon went along. It was bigger now, almost the size of a dog. Billy sat down at the table. The dragon sat down on the table. This sort of thing was not usually permitted, but there wasn't much Billy's mother could do about it. She had already said there was no such thing as a dragon, and if there's no such thing, you can't tell it to get down off the table. Mother made some pancakes for Billy, but the dragon ate them all. Mother made some more, but the dragon ate those too. Mother kept making pancakes until she ran out of batter. Billy only got one of them, but he said that was all he really wanted anyway. Billy went upstairs to brush his teeth. Mother started clearing the table. The dragon, who was quite as big as Mother by this time, made himself comfortable on the hall rug and went to sleep. By the time Billy came back downstairs, the dragon had grown so much he filled the entire hall. Billy had to go around by way of the living room to get to where his mother was. "I didn't know dragons grew so fast," said Billy. "There's no such thing as a dragon," said Mother firmly. Cleaning the downstairs took Mother all morning, what with the dragon in the way and having to climb in and out of the windows to get from room to room. By noon, the dragon filled the whole house. Its head hung out the front door, its tail hung out the back door, and there wasn't a room in the house that didn't have some part of the dragon in it. When the dragon awoke from his nap, he was hungry. A bakery truck went by. The smell of fresh bread was more than the dragon could resist. The dragon ran down the street after the bakery truck. The house went along, of course, like the shell on a snail. The postman was just coming up the path with some post for the Bixbys when their house rushed past him, headed down the street. He chased the Bixby's house for a few blocks, but he couldn't catch it. When Mr. Bixby came home for lunch, the first thing he noticed was that the house was gone. Luckily, one of the neighbours was able to tell him which way it went. Mr. Bixby got in his car and went looking for the house. He studied all the houses as he drove along. Finally, he saw one that looked familiar. Billy and Mrs. Bixby were waving from an upstairs window. Mr. Bixby climbed over the dragon's head onto the porch roof and through the upstairs window. "How did this happen?" Mr. Bixby asked. "It was the dragon," said Billy. "There's no such thing," Mother started to say. "There is a dragon," Billy insisted. "A very big dragon." And Billy patted the dragon on the head. The dragon wagged its tail happily. Then, even faster than it had grown, the dragon started getting smaller. Soon it was kitten-sized again. "I don't mind dragons this big," said Mother. "Why did it have to grow so big?" "I'm not sure," said Billy, "but I think it just wanted to be noticed." There's no such thing. Is there not, huh? Or are there dragons? Things that we won't speak about. Things that we don't deal with. Crippling debt that we're not facing up to. Addictions to pornography or alcohol. Miserliness in our lives. Resentments towards God because of illness or disappointment with God. How do we notice the dragons? Well, speaking as a married man, I notice dragons in my house when I get very tense with my wife and I blow up over the smallest of things. A little bit of untidiness there, a little bit of mistaken, or she forgets something, and I explode as if it's the biggest thing in the world. But really, it's a small thing, and that means there's something else I'm not dealing with. Parents, when we get in a rage about something our children do, and it's not like they actually assassinated somebody, but we get it all out of proportion. We react with rage as if they've just done something unforgivable. There's something else going on. With older Christians, perhaps sometimes it's when we get resentments and we don't deal with it, and they build and build and build over time. We find ourselves holding grudges in a way that we never used to in the past. The Bible, the church in the Bible had dragons to deal with. It had the martyrdom of Stephen, which could have discouraged the entire church in Acts 7. They had to deal with it. Now it led to Saul, who was there watching it, ultimately becoming Paul. There was some treasure hidden in that martyrdom that didn't seem obvious at the time. Or the persecution of the church at the beginning of Acts chapter 8, which led to the spread of the church, something they'd never anticipated God doing it that way. There was a dragon that led to great treasure for the kingdom. Or the Jew-Gentile controversy in Acts chapter 15, when it looked like the church might split over the issue. And yet it led to unity and expansion because they dealt with it. They faced up to that dragon. And I would dare say we need to face up to some of our own. Personally, perhaps as a church, but personally as well. So what I would like to do today is spend the rest of our time looking at one example of how Jesus dealt with a dragon. And not to say this is the only way, but to say this is an example of how we deal with things and maybe an inspiration for whatever dragon you might have currently living in your house. So let's turn to Mark chapter 9 and look at this example of Jesus here. Mark chapter 9. Mark 9 is where we would go next. The thing we have to bear in mind is what terrifies you the most holds the greatest treasure. It's what terrifies you the most that holds the greatest treasure available to you. Mark chapter 9. Let's have a look here in verse 30. Let's go there. Mark 9 and verse 30. So they're traveling, the disciples of Jesus traveling with them, as they often do. And in Mark 9 and verse 30, it says that they left that place and passed through Galilee. Jesus did not want anyone to know where they were, because he was teaching his disciples. And he said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. They will kill him, and after 3 days he will rise." But they did not understand what he meant and were afraid to ask him. They came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the road?" But they kept quiet, because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, "Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all." He took a little child whom he placed among them, and then taking the child in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me." Right. Now, what's this got to do with dealing with dragons? It's an interesting thing. So let me ask you, what you think. What do you think is the dragon here? What's going on? What's the thing that needs to be? What's the actual dragon that's hiding in the story, if you like, or hiding in their lives? What's going on? What would you say is the dragon? Or what might be the dragon? What do you think, Pip? Okay. All right. Pride. Pride that's evident but not been dealt with might be a dragon there. Yeah, Miko.
I think it's also their limited view in that they can't really grasp God and the big picture. And then they, you revert back into your own role. Like, okay, well, let me try to put it in my size box.
Okay, they've got limited perspective on what God is doing in Jesus and what Jesus himself is doing. He's talking about the cross. They don't get it, right? So there's a limited, narrow view here. Good, okay. Any other dragons you can see? Yes, Mark.
I would say selfish ambition, looking out for their own interests.
Okay, diametrically opposed to the heart of Jesus, but yes, some selfish ambition. Iggy, what were you going to say?
Instead of asking the Lord, they're angry at themselves.
Okay, they're not even talking to Jesus. They're just arguing amongst themselves, okay? All right, some things going on here. Some dynamics that aren't entirely healthy between followers of Jesus, the greatest servant of all, right? So some interesting things. They're not resolving their relationship problem. The disciples clearly have a relationship problem. When you're with a group of people and you're arguing about who is the greatest, what are you really arguing about? You're arguing about, I'm the greatest, right? No, I'm the greatest. No, I'm the greatest. I mean, you've got a 12 of them, maybe. We don't know exactly how many disciples, perhaps, in this particular circumstance here, but they're arguing about who's the greatest. It's becoming political. It's becoming egotistical. It's nothing to do with Jesus. They have a relationship problem between them, and they are not dealing with it in a healthy way. They're not dealing with it in a Christ-like way. They're dealing with it in the way that you might do if you didn't have a spiritual perspective. So that's what's going on here. They're missing the point. Now, but what is the treasure? All right, what is the treasure that the dragon is hoarding? What's not being released? What might be, maybe it's not spoken specifically in this passage, but thinking about what's going on here and what happens in the rest of their lives. Now, what's the treasure that's available here that could be released and enjoyed and used in a good way? What would you say? What's the treasure? We know what the dragon is. What's the treasure? Why deal with this, Albert?
Unity.
Unity is a beautiful thing. It's a treasure. Isn't it a treasure? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an incalculably valuable treasure to have unity. Yes, Mika?
I think it's just they're missing the power of God. So Jesus is with them, and they could all be the greatest in whatever God wants them to do.
Okay, they can be the greatest in what God wants them to do, in the sense of what greatness truly means. Yes. Okay, I mean, yes, go ahead.
I think also, they're just not humble like Jesus. They have not taken on any of his characteristics at that point.
Well, they're missing out on the on Christ-like character that could be developed through this if they learned true humility. Jonty.
I think they're arguing who's the greatest amongst themselves when walking in front of them.
Okay. Yeah, they're not valuing having Jesus with them in the way that they should and would have been good for them and wonderful to enjoy. I think there's a lot of treasure in here. Probably unity is the one that I pick up the most, because as it says in Psalm 133, how good and pleasant it is when brothers and sisters live together in unity. It's a beautiful thing, and it is something that is rare in this world. Think about your families, your extended families. How much unity is there, really there? Think about your workplace. How much unity is there really in your team or your work situation? Think about your neighborhood. Think about the politics of this country and this world. How much unity is there? Unity is rare, and they're missing it. Let's move on, and we'll come back to some things if we have time. Okay. Now, I've got another question for you, and then we'll draw some lessons from this and finish. Now, what do you notice about the practical ways that Jesus dealt with the dragon? The dragon is there. They're disunified, they're proud, they're arguing, they're missing the point. There's a lot of problems here. It's a powerful dragon. It's breathing fire. What does Jesus do? What do you notice about what he does? Just pick out one thing, if you would, and tell me if one thing you see that Jesus does in dealing with this. Reynard, what have you got?
Stay calm, start with asking a question.
One thing, okay. All right, one thing each, because otherwise... So, okay, he stays calm, all right? He doesn't react with, what on earth are you doing? You stupid disciples, why do I... I mean, he's calm, right? Very calm. Okay, what else do we see in this passage? In the way that Jesus deals with this, Albert?
Child in his
Right. He's setting an example by having that child be with him. Okay. Good. What else? Richard.
He's very clear about what the spiritual truth is that they're missing. So anyone who wants to be first must be the very last to be serving the Lord. So he just kind of cuts through all the ways and just starts with.
He cuts through it, he gets to the heart of the matter, he doesn't fudge it, he doesn't try to make it all nice or something, he just says, this is the issue. So they know what it is. They're not confused. Excellent, thank you. Any more? What else do we see about the way that he deals with it? What is so wise about the way that he deals with this, Bianca?
He doesn't blame. He doesn't point people out and they're like, I knew you were trying to do that. He's just, that's the situation.
Excellent. Quite right. Mark?
He flipped the script to make it seem like it's a great thing. You know, you guys want to be the greatest? Yeah, you can be the greatest by being a servant.
Okay. All right. So he takes the issue itself and then he transforms it into something beautiful, in fact. So what was ugly and breathing fire is now beautiful, or can be. Good. Anything else? Yes.
He sits down. You know? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. He takes the time necessary to deal with an issue that is not going to be solved by some quick just, well, he knows for some reason it's not just a quick challenge or rebuke or pointing out the facts, but sitting down, taking the time. Good, thank you. Don?
He doesn't take sides or show favoritism.
Okay, he's not, yeah, well, James, you're right, you are the greatest, but Peter, or something, no. Right, he's dealing with the whole group. Good stuff. Yes, anything else? Yes, Pip. Okay. Okay, the child seems to be helpful, hopefully, in them grasping the point and not making it all about them. There's something else. There's a bigger issue going on here. All right. Let me sum up with a few thoughts about this and tell me what you think. So, first thing I think we see is that he's wise. And then secondly, that he's gentle. And thirdly, that he's creative. Now, under the point about him being wise, Jesus chooses the right occasion. He chooses the right time. Do you notice he's been listening? What were you arguing about on the road? He could hear them while they were arguing. He knew they were arguing. Did he deal with it on the road? No, he didn't. Why did he delay? For some reason, it was going to be better to have them all sit down in one place and deal with it then, not on the road. So Jesus had wisdom in knowing when to deal with it. Sometimes you deal with the dragon straight away. Other times you wait to a better time. This is true in our parenting. You know this, right? Parents. So if you... There are times to bring something up with your children. There are times to wait until a little bit later. Not forever, but a little bit later. If you do it right there and then, it'll make it worse. Same is true in marriage. There are times, husbands and wives, to bring things up with each other. And there are times to say, maybe we'll wait till this evening. Or maybe till we've had a chance to pray together. But there's some wisdom. We don't just jump in. Some of us are jump away people. Some of us are jump in people by nature. If you're a jump away person, you need to hear my next point. I'll come to it in a minute about not delaying. But if you're a jump in person, you need to hear this point about actually it's not always the right thing to dive in straight away when perhaps emotions are strong. People won't be able to hear what you're saying. So you see this wisdom here about the timing. He waits till later. He waits till they're in the house. It's a safe place. The crowds aren't around anymore. Maybe they'd have felt too ashamed to be confronted in public. I don't know. But he waits till they're in the house, a private place where he can deal with it personally. Really wise. He's patient. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't pray about all this. And that's a good thing for us to do before we tackle a dragon. You're going to need all the spiritual help you need. You better pray. So he does that. He's very wise about that. And then when he gets into the house, he doesn't delay. You know, well, we'll do it after dinner. Oh, well, we'll do it before we go to bed. Oh, we'll do it in the morning. Okay, now we're in the house. Right time, right place. Let's deal with it. So there's wisdom there. I like that wisdom. And he's brave, of course. Secondly, he's gentle. As Reynard pointed out, what does he do first of all? He doesn't say, why were you arguing, you foolish disciples? He just says, what's the phrase here? What were you arguing about? Now that's about the least threatening question you can ask while still being asking a question that's on the topic. What were you arguing about? I love that question. It's an open question. It gives them space to confess, to be honest. And it's a relevant question. It's not a vague question. It's still connected to what's been going on. It's non-judgmental at this point. He's not using that as a weapon. He's just saying, what were you arguing about? Well, and of course, if it ends up being, what's tomorrow's weather going to be like? It's probably no big deal. But of course, Jesus knew it was more than that. But he asks a non-threatening question. What a great way to deal with this. And it shows that he was listening, which is another good quality that we all need to have. If we're going to have good relationships, we've got to be good listeners and noticing what's going on in our relationships. My father once demonstrated this well to me. In my first term at university, I spent all my money for my whole year. I just wasn't ready for you. I don't know why I wasn't ready for it. I spent my entire budget in about 12 weeks, mostly on beer. In fact, almost entirely on beer. And I went home at Christmas, and my father divined that something was wrong. You know how dads sometimes can tell? It's a funny insight they have. But he didn't bring it up straight away. But we were sitting down, and I still remember exactly where we were sitting. And this was a very long time ago. He was sitting in a particular chair there, and I was in a particular chair here, and there was the fireplace there, and we were chatting, and he wasn't looking directly at me. He was sort of looking sideways, just vaguely. How are things at uni? Oh, yeah, how's the finances? Well, it's been a bit of a challenge. I have been struggling a bit with that. Okay, he said, so how much money have you got left? And I said, well, actually, none. And he said, oh. He said, what happened? And I said, well, I spent it on beer. And he said, how does that work? And we had a conversation, and then he asked a very insightful question. He said, when you go to the pub with your friends, who buys the first round? And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, I do. He said, is there always a second round? I said, not always. He said, so basically, when you go to the pub with your friends will always expect you to buy the first round, and sometimes that's the only round, so therefore you pay for all their drinks every time you go to the pub. Is that right? I said, actually, that's just about right. Very insightful question. And it helped me to understand something not just about money. It helped me to understand something about myself. I'm trying to buy friendship. I was very insecure in terms of friends, and that was what was going on. It helped me to get underneath the headline was lack of money, but the issue was much deeper. And a simple good question from my father revealed that to me. Isn't Jesus doing a similar thing here? A gentle approach, lovely, wonderful. So we've got the wise aspect, the wisdom aspect, we've got the gentleness, and then thirdly, we've got the creativity and the persistence. He's very creative. Jesus feels the resistance, doesn't he? He asks the question, and what's their response? Silence. They are guilty, and they know they are, but not one of them wants to break the silence. And that happens sometimes in relationships, doesn't it? You want to resolve something, and the other person's not responding, they're not... What do? Do you give up? Do you become a battering ram? I will sort this out, you will repent. Jesus doesn't do this. He feels the resistance, and then he sits down. So he starts standing up, then ends up sitting down, calls them to him, and tells them a truth, and then he takes the child. He takes the child and holds the child and says, it's about your behavior I'm dealing with here. You need to welcome this child like I'm welcoming this child. You need to welcome each other and value each other in the way that I am welcoming and valuing this child. In this illustration, it's not so much about the nature of the child. It's about the example that Jesus is setting. And saying, I am welcoming the vulnerable and the weak. I am welcoming the one who needs my protection. you need each other, and you need to have a different heart towards each other if my mission is ever going to have any hope of succeeding. And so he doesn't attack, he finds another way to deal with the issue. He's creative and carries on until he gets the point through to his disciples. He surfaces the real issue, he digs deeper, and they end up settling on a better mode of being, of living, of a better way of relating to one another, of being humble with one another. That's the goal. And they don't get all of this right now, but it begins. And ultimately, by the time Jesus has finished with them and has dealt with all of these dragons, as they've gone along in their 3 years of discipleship with him, by the end of all of that, well, it's amazing. They are completely transformed after Pentecost. And they are united in a way that the Romans and the Jewish authorities cannot separate them. It's an astonishing, powerful treasure. A great reward that there is in store for dealing with this dragon. Jesus did say, the truth will set you free. And that's what dealing with dragons is all about. It's about the truth. It's about getting to the truth in a gentle and wise and loving way, such that we can harvest the treasure that Jesus has in store for us all. It's a wonderful and powerful thing. I have a suggestion for our quiet times, if you want to take this on this week. If we're going to fight some dragons, we need the right protection. We need the right armor. And in terms of that, I would say there's no better passage to study than Ephesians 6. So we're not going to do that now. But I'd like to encourage you, if you could now identify a dragon in your life, probably a relationship that needs some attention. Perhaps it's your marriage. Perhaps there's some tension that's been there for a while. Perhaps it's a friend, just a friend in the church or a friend of any kind, and there's some stress there, some anxiety. Maybe it's to do with your children. Maybe there's something not quite right. I'm not saying it will get solved in one conversation, but if it's not dealt with, it's going to get bigger and bigger and fill your house until you trip over it and you can't move in your house because of it. This is what happens in households. Maybe it's that. I don't know. But if there's a dragon and you know what it is, then why not do some meditation on Ephesians 6, which is really all about relationships, actually, chapters 4, 5, and 6. And that'll help you to be prepared to deal with a dragon in your house, in your life, in your heart. Remember, this dragon is hoarding treasure. The treasure of unity. The treasure of deep love. The treasure of restored relationships. The treasure of joy that comes when relationships are put right. And we know what that's like. We just got to have the courage to deal with the dragon. And grabbing that dragon by its tail and wrestling with it will lead to great treasure. The treasure is there. What terrifies you the most holds the greatest treasure. I want to encourage us to make it our lifestyle and our habit to steal dragon's treasure. There's a lot of it there. There's a lot of it about. And it is available. Maybe the example of Jesus here gives you some clues as to how you can deal with the dragons that you have in your life. But we can live, if not in a dragon-free country, I believe that we can live in a dragon-tamed country, where the dragons don't grow too big. And we deal with them when they're small enough, and get the treasure, and keep moving on to the next dragon, which then we should not let grow too large. But we can live in dragon-tamed country and enjoy the treasure that God has in mind for us all. Thank you very much, and God bless.